Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
The Ida Mae has become the stuff of legend, and now it's a movie.
Deal Island claims the title Home of the Skipjack. These iconic wooden sailboats embody our unique regional pride for their historic place in the commercial fishing industry and their connection to the livelihood of the people that live here.
That's the voice of Tara Gladden in a new documentary about the restoration of the Ida Mae. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush, and in our studios, one of the two brothers who carried out the restoration, Gordon Gladden, is here. Also on hand is the next generation, David Gladden, and with his wife Tara, who made the film. Welcome all, first of all, to the family for being here. And I want to start with Tara. And David, because about the film, what inspired you to decide to go ahead and make this documentary, and how far back does it reach in terms of how you decided to begin to sort of do this? Once you realized that these two guys were actually really serious about about completing the task,
David? Well, we had gone to Brooklyn College and studied art and video art, and coming back, you know, we decided to use our skills to document the reconstruction of the Ida Mae. We felt that this was important for Maryland's cultural heritage, and not only that, but important just for me being able to know how to reconstruct the boat in the future. I'll have all this footage, and I'll be able to look at it and know exactly what to do when the time comes. And like I say, hopefully later rather than sooner for the reconstruction of the Ida Mae.
Tara, what was that like watching over a long period of time? Because this didn't happen just over, you know, a year's time. It was like, about 4 or 5 years, I think it was. What was that like watching this boat be taken apart and then really kind of being put back together?
Well, it was a real commitment. You know, I was there for a lot of the process, filming, as everyone else involved were working. So it was really exciting to watch it all happen. And it was interesting because I almost felt like a backseat worker or something. Because they would be doing things and I would be chiming in occasionally from behind the camera. So it's a little funny. There are moments of that in the documentary.
Were there, by the way, any surprises as you went along as to that cropped up that surprised you about how this thing was being built or the kinds of things they had to engage in?
Well, we were surprised at the amount of rotten wood that we had. We didn't have any idea that the reconstruction would be as major as it was. So it was always a surprise that we'd just keep tearing out and, oh no, this is rotten too. Good grief. And just kept, you know, we thought we would be done much sooner and be sailing her, and it just kept going on. And finally we put a deadline for Labor Day skipjack races 2011, and we did it.
As a matter of fact, we have a little clip there of this effort to dig through the wood here, and why don't we go ahead and play that clip, and we'll talk to Gordon on the other end.
Right there. Can you see?
Yeah, it's rotten.
Yeah, it's rotten. Mmm. Well, I tell you what we can do. We can take this whole piece out.
Mm-hmm. What you gonna have to do?
And then piece it run into that.
Isn't that something?
Huh?
I say, isn't that something that the heart is
well,
what's
it's...
That's right here or not. Can't tell.
Yeah, can't tell because it's the inside that's rotten, not the outside.
It's funny how it rots.
Yeah. From the inside.
But now, at least...
Looks pretty good.
Maybe it's all right. Mm-hmm. Which is a help.
Yeah.
Maybe yours over there is good. So if we have to replace this, Now, that's still not bad, because we're on the place it compared to that.
Gordon, I want to turn to you. Were you surprised at how much rotten wood there was?
Oh, absolutely. When we started this project, we thought we'd be finished in a year, and it was rotting faster than we could keep up with it. So we would finish one piece. Matter of fact, right up until the end, last year about this time, we found out that the stem and the inner stem, which is two great big pieces of oak, about 6.5 feet long, they were both rotten too. So we had to tear out some of the stuff that we had done on the sides and get to this stem. So yeah, it was a real surprise how fast she was rotting on us.
We went and heard just a moment ago that there was that the rot seemed to be occurring inside the vessel that was out. So what was that?
Yeah, you know, when water starts getting into wood, it's going to find a crack somewhere and it's going to get in. But the heart, that was what surprised us the most. The heart of the wood was rotting faster than the outside. And I suppose that's because the outside had paint on it and protected it. But on the inside, there wasn't anything to protect it.
So what was it like? I mean, because if you see the film, you can see these are not small boards. These are huge blocks of wood that you are trying to deal with. What was that like, particularly at your age, trying to like deal with this very heavy?
Well, needless to say, it was very heavy. The wood itself is a full 2 inches thick, and we were dealing with 12-inch wide boards. And in many cases, 20 feet long. So we were ingenious in fixing ways in order to be able to hold that wood up and to get it bent in the right positions. And it was a project, believe it or not. It was a big project.
And David, what did you think about this whole idea of these big pieces of wood that obviously I don't think you really anticipated having to deal with?
Yeah, with the skipjack, every piece of wood is huge, and we're using all these power tools and huge clamps. It was kind of frightening sometimes, and I wondered if somebody would get hurt, and luckily nobody did. And to get back to with the heart of the wood being bad, you would have no idea. Everything looked great. You know, everything's sitting up painted and looks pretty, and you think everything's fine, and then you just start investigating, and you find out that the inside is rotten, even though it looks great. It was very frustrating.
Almost every time we worked on the boat, we would say, how did they ever do this in 1906 with hand tools? You just don't know how they did all the things that we did with power tools, how they did it with hand tools.
Oh, can you even begin to imagine what that must have been like? I mean, doing all this stuff by hand?
It was hard work.
They must have had a whole community helping.
Terry, what did you think about this, about the idea that you, as you filmed this, that you were looking at these? I mean, really, it's a very fundamental kind of carpentry in many ways. And with these very bulky kind of pieces of wood, what was your impression as you filmed this?
I was sometimes quite worried that someone would get hurt. sometimes it would make me very nervous to watch what was going on. And it was sometimes extremely challenging to get the shots that I wanted to get, because the wood was so big, to try and get into those shots to see what was actually going on. But I too wondered how this was done all of these years ago in 1906. It was really backbreaking work for me to watch everyone doing this, and I really felt it was important to document it, to show all of this work that was being done by all of the men involved.
Gordon, by the way, what kind of tools would they have then used back then?
Oh, well, they were hand saws and hand planes and hand drills and lathes, things that we never had any of those on the work site. Everything was electric. One day, Don, we were putting on, was it the log rail, David? And it's a 4x6 or 4x8, probably a 4x8 piece of wood, and it was 20 feet long, and we were bending it around the side, and we had clamps and everything, and we had it right where we wanted it. And Frank said, I'm not so sure that's not going to crack. And my brother Albert was standing right there, and all of a sudden this thing went off like a shotgun when it cracked and broke. And so we had to start all over again, bringing it around.
As a matter of fact, we have a little clip of that of the snap, and I think what really struck me, particularly as I watched it the first time, was I kind of jumped at the sound. Let's
we all do.
Go ahead.
Break right down this knot.
All right, well, you see the break?
That's it. I see it on the outside.
What are we talking about here? We're talking about a knot that's cracking here. Maybe you better get off, Albert. Do it from the up here.
How far we got to come in yet? That one got one. Exactly where it did it. Exactly where it did it. Mm.
It's fruit break time. Fruit break.
Did that surprise you as much as I suppose somebody watching it did?
It was very demoralizing. Yeah. Here we had cut this board and we had got it almost where we wanted it. And then it broke, and we had to start all over again. So, you know, we'd probably spent 3 hours doing what we did before it broke, and then we had to spend even more hours than that putting it back.
Now, this tell me a little bit about the history of the boat. And I understand that obviously your father and the grandfather had captained some skipjacks. Tell me a little bit about the family history here.
Well, as far back as history shows, the Gladden family were owners of dredge boats from schooners down to skipjacks. And my grandfather was a skipjack owner and a captain. And my father began buying skipjacks back in the early 40s and then owned 12 during his lifetime. And the Ida May was the last one. And that's kind of why we decided that we should keep this tradition going and have a skipjack in the Gladden family.
Now, I understand that initially, I mean, his father took him out, and he wasn't really crazy about this idea.
Yeah, Daddy quit school in the fifth grade to go work on the boat, and they were up the bay. And the first week that they were there, Daddy said, Papa, I think I've made a mistake. I want to go back to school. And Papa said, it's too late now. You're my crew. So that was the end of school, and that was the beginning of my father working on the water.
Is that right? Now, I understand that he'd left for a while and then came back. Is that right?
Well, during the war, World War II, okay. He went to Baltimore and worked at Bethlehem Steel for mm-hmm. 5 years. And, okay. Of course, while he was there, he bought skipjacks. And we visited the harbor in Baltimore every Sunday after church. And he would find people who worked on the water, and he would talk with them. A lot of them were from the Deal Island area.
And I was... David, what is it like hearing about this family history? I mean, obviously, a lot of this is not first time you've heard it, but nonetheless, I suspect you've probably heard it more maybe you would like. But I mean, what is that sense about that the history about your family being here and its involvement in this very historic vessel?
Oh, I'm fascinated by history and family history, and to tell you the truth, I did hear a few stories that I hadn't heard before doing the documentary.
Such as any come to mind or?
Different stories about my grandfather in Baltimore that I hadn't heard before. We didn't end up using a lot of these things in the documentary because we streamlined it, but I have a lot more footage of the family history than we used, and we'll probably end up putting that on the internet, on the blog, different little chapters. Hmm. I love to hear about the family history, and it's interesting to hear about my grandfather and the first time he went out on the water and how cold it was and how he wanted to go home, because my grandfather did that the same thing to my father and uncle too. He took them out on the coldest day of the year kind of to chase them off the water, I think, to show them how hard life this was and that they better study hard. And is this true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My grandfather took me out, my brother and I out one December day. And when you would pull the dredge up, ice would form on the deck. And, you know, I was probably 12 and Albert was 17. And that was the first and only day we ever dredged. It was too hard to work for us.
And you went back to school?
I went back to school and started studying.
Were you surprised, by the way, as a kid, how hard that was? that kind of life? Or did
I
you
really
have a
sense? Was because our father owned a store, and it sounded interesting and romantic listening to these boat captains talk about days out on the water. But when you got out there and worked on it, there's nothing romantic about it. It's just hard, back-breaking work.
Now, I think you're talking about how your father had a store, and I guess a lot of the skipjack captains and all that would gather there. What were they like?
Oh, yeah. This was before television, back in the 40s and the early 50s. And every evening, the men would come out, and there'd probably be 15 guys in the store every evening, and they would tell stories. And there was enough smoke in there to create rain, I think. And they just talked about things that they did, how they worked on the water and the good old days and how they went out in fogs and didn't know where they were, but they would sound the bottom and find out exactly, you know, based on the sand or the mud or the shells or whatever, they knew where they were. So it was an intriguing thing for me to listen to those stories.
And David, did you hear a lot of this stuff when you were growing up?
Oh, certainly. I heard a lot of these stories and a lot of, you know, tall tales associated with these sorts of stories. And a lot of stories about my great-grandfather who, you know, he saw ghosts and saw the devil and has a lot of supernatural tales associated with him as well. So...
Is that right? I mean, can you give me an example at all, or are you just...
Sure. So one morning he was going to work, early morning, to work on the water, and there was a ground fog that morning, and he saw two men dressed in old army uniforms walking above the fog as if the fog was ground, and they disappeared in front of a man's house, and, you know, he... just went to work. You know, what is he going to do? And he comes back and he finds out that man died that day.
And those soldiers were there to take the soul of that man. And David only lives 300 yards from where that happened now.
You feel comfortable living there?
Yes. I'm actually writing stories about my great-grandfather. So this film is an installment about my grandfather and father, and then hopefully we'll have some stories about my great-grandfather come out in the future.
But he's been writing these stories since he was at the University of Colorado. He used to call me, and he'd say, now tell me about Papa and this and that, and I would tell him. So he's been writing these stories for a long time.
Since the 1990s, but my writing teacher told me I would do better with maturity for these stories, so maybe I'm reaching that age now.
There could be a book in the offing here from you?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And Tara, what did you, now obviously you kind of marrying into the family here, what did you make of all these stories and what you heard from the family? I mean, it's not, most people aren't familiar with this kind of thing.
I find them really fascinating. I certainly, after this project, know a lot more about the Gladden family. But that's, for me, that was part of the wonder of the project itself. I'm very interested in place and heritage and how family ties into culture. So this project for me was very much about that, how culture and family and heritage and industry all tie together.
Do you come from the shore or do you come from somewhere else?
No, I'm not. I'm not from the Eastern Shore.
So where did you come from?
I was born and raised in Philadelphia.
Ah, okay. Well, that's not too far. So did you have some sense about the shore before you got here? Or
no, I'm learning as I go.
This project, well, I guess we're going to get into the exhibit that's going to occur in Pocomoke City. We're going to open it tomorrow, June the 2nd, on the river there. And the Ida May is down, docked at the Delmarva Discovery Center in Pocomoke City. And Tara, tell them how part of how this was financed so that the viewers will know.
Okay. The exhibition, the Ida May, will be docked at the Delmarva Discovery Center. There will be an audio-visual installation, as well as the documentary will be playing as part of the installation. It is running from June 2nd through September 8th, and it is supported by a grant from the Maryland State Arts Council, an agency dedicated to cultivating a vibrant cultural community where the arts thrive, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. So come see us at the Delmarva Discovery Center.
So now, getting back to the ship or the boat here for a second. So so you're going along and you're replacing all of this rotten wood, but then you've got to, but then you have the masts, right? And what was that like trying to get that up? Because I guess somebody came along and was able to give you a hand in terms of equipment and so on.
Yeah. I bet in the last 6 years I looked at a million trees because we needed a tree that was straight and long and no knots. And there aren't any. So so one day I went down to Cropper Brothers Lumber in Willards, and Sidney Cropper said, you go out there and any tree that you can find that fits your lichens, we'll take care of it. So we found this huge tree, and they whittled it down to the size that I wanted, and then it was taken down and installed in the boat a year and a half later. And we used a big crane, and you know, it has wire lines on it on both sides, and the back and the front, and so forth. But it's just a huge tree.
A telephone pole, really.
Well, yeah, yeah, go ahead.
But larger than a telephone pole. And the tree actually, or the log, was 70 feet long, and they cut it off to 57 feet, which is the length that we need.
And how heavy is that? Do you make sense?
I don't know, but it's heavy.
And then I guess at the bottom, as I was watching the documentary, at the bottom it's sort of rounded, I guess.
Well, actually, they cut it into 8 sides down the bottom. And that fits into
mast step.
A step at the bottom, and so it all fits together. And actually, at the Delmarva Discovery Center, we have a piece of the last mast and the piece of the mast that was before that. Actually, the piece of the mast that was before that came out of a ram that was built in Delaware. And that ram sunk out in the Chesapeake Bay, and 19 people drowned off of it in a hurricane. And my father retrieved the one of the masts out of it. And so we had that mast in the Item A for probably 30 years before now.
So in terms of the shape of the boat, is it fairly – that finally got all the rotten wood out? You're satisfied that you got all of it out now?
I would say that at least 90% of the boat is new. Mm. It's built out of salt-treated wood that was salt-treated with marine construction. So, I think she's seaworthy.
Now, as a matter of fact, one of the questions, and we sort of alluded to this earlier, is whether or not this thing would ever get done. Obviously, initially, we thought, well, maybe a year, whatever it happens to be. But then it seemed to kind of stretch on as you found that, there was more rotten wood, there was more work to do. Matter of fact, we have a clip, our last clip, of this. I guess you guys got you sort of captured this kind of little discussion as going back and forth about whether or not they would make it to Labor Day. Let's hear a little bit about that.
You gonna sail with us when we get her in?
I don't think you'll ever get her. I'm telling you the truth. I don't think you're gonna get her now.
That's what you said 5 years ago.
I didn't think you're gonna get her.
Hold on to that.
You think we're gonna make it Labor Day, Wes?
No.
Not this year?
No. No. No.
Wesley says no.
Not going to make it for Labor Day.
Not this year, maybe next year.
Next year.
Next year.
Gordon said it might not be pretty, but we'll be there Labor Day. That's what he said. So we can do the cosmetic stuff later, as long as she'll hold water.
Oh, she'll hold water.
Or I mean.
So were you surprised that you were finally able to get it together?
Well, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but we were pleased that we got it all together. Wesley, by the way, was one of our father's captains of our big boats, either the Mamie Mister or the Harry Elball years ago. And he was there almost every time that we worked. And he's a World War II vet, and we just loved to have him around. And I'm not so sure that he was just trying to egg us on, but it did, and we got her done.
I think they did have bets whether we would get her done or not down at the marina, and I think we were beating the odds.
But as you know, Don, because I saw you step on the Catherine last year on Labor Day when we raced, we didn't do much of a race because we blew our jib away before the race even started. But we have a new set of sails coming. It'll be here by the end of June. And we've built a new yawl boat this year. And it pushed us all the way up the Pocomoke River from Deal Island on Tuesday of this week. So things are coming together. Things have come together.
Well, as a matter of fact, and I understand this, and you kind of alluded to this, that there was a sort of a community kind of project. I mean, it wasn't just the two of you or your family, but there were not only people from the community, but there were other people. For instance, I think there was one person who had read a piece in the Daily Times who came in. I mean, what was that like?
Frank Antes, who is a master builder, came all the way from Tiaskin twice a week, and last year actually three or four times a week to help us do this. And Tom Evans, who's a retired banker from Salisbury, came down two or three times a week and helped. So, yeah, there was a lot of that type of work going on.
We would still be sitting on the bank if it wasn't for those Frank Antes and Tom Evans helping work.
Absolutely.
We were actually, once we found that the stem was bad, we kind of had lost a little heart, thinking, oh my gosh, because we thought we were going to be launched and we see this major project. And luckily for us, those two guys came and helped us during the most difficult part and got us launched by 2011. Otherwise, we would still be on the bank.
Tara, what was that like watching not only just these people working, but then it seemed to bring in like the community and even people outside the community?
Well, a real feeling of teamwork evolved. And I felt like being there, I was part of it. I really enjoyed watching all of this happen and all the labor that went into it and how all of that labor just transformed the boat back into a sailing working vessel. It was, you know, a miracle. It really was.
So what is it like for those who don't go out on the water often, or certainly not on a skipjack? What is that like being out there sailing like that?
It is just marvelous. When the wind hits the sails and the boat takes off, it's just a great feeling. I get seasick in motorboats. I can sail on the Ida May for a week and never even feel it, but it's just a marvelous feeling to have the sail in those the wind in those sails.
Well, we've recently, for the Deal Island skipjack races, we've had up to 14 skipjacks participate, which is the most I've ever seen, even when I was a child. And it takes you back to the 19th century when you're out there and you see all these skipjacks with their sails out. It really makes you feel like you're 100 years back, and it's a very peaceful feeling.
By the way, what do you see as the future of skipjack in terms of, I mean, we have, I think you said 14. Obviously, there are more that are not necessarily on the water. Should mention Stoney Whitelock, who is captain of the Catherine. He's been instrumental in trying to bring back some of these boats, at least on the water. What do you think is the future here in terms of getting more boats like that and maybe more participating in the skipjack races?
Well, it's encouraging that the Tangier Sound has had a good supply of oysters in the last few years, so the skipjacks have come down there to work. And you know, hopefully that'll continue. But I think the real future of the skipjack is in tourism and taking people out on the water to see that. Stoney Whitelock has done a great job bringing boats from all over the Chesapeake Bay down for the skipjack races. So we're encouraged.
And hopefully as the bay gets cleaned up, the oysters will come back. And I think, skipjacks are important. It's the last commercial sailing fleet in the country. And this is very important for Maryland's cultural heritage to keep this alive.
Wait, by the way, Gordon, when you were growing up, were there a lot of skipjacks?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. How many? If you look out the bay,
I could on the second floor of our school building. You could look out the window and see 30 of them out there working at one time. So it was nothing. I mean, and there were several rocks, but on that particular rock, you'd see 30, and then there were two or three other rocks where there'd be 30 on each of those too.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully, maybe this film and your boat going down to Pocomoke will encourage others. I guess
hope so.
Yeah. Yep. Is there a lot of talk about maybe are there other skipjacks now that are maybe on they're in dry dock, as it were, but the people are working on them?
Yeah. Well, the Catherine, of course, is going to be rebuilt by Stoney, and it's coming together.
Okay. We've been talking about the Item A, which was restored after about 5 years with a very hard work, the skipjack, and it will be down in Pocomoke, and you can go ahead and check that out. And we have been talking with Gordon Gladden. He's one of the two brothers who carried out the restoration. Their family owns this particular vessel. Also on hand, David Gladden, who is a son, as well as David's wife, Tara, who helped certainly make the film. And we appreciate all of you coming by to talk with us. And good luck to you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Delmar Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC 14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit pac14.org.